Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams, here live in the Right Side studios for hour number two. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international, and oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, I am in studio right now with somebody I've had the pleasure of knowing now for a number of years. So listen, I'm going to say this right now, unequivocally. Next Tuesday is election day. Do not be the one who says, oh man, I forgot. Or just as bad, be the one who goes, well, it doesn't matter anyway. We're a red state. Trump's going to win. There's a whole lot more on the ballot than this, that. You've got local races across the entire state, and you've got some statewide races that are contentious, and they need to be determined, and they will be determined by the primary, not by the general. They will absolutely, in a red state like this, a lot of times your elections, they come to a conclusion at the primary level because we only have Republicans in the race, or if that matter, Republicans are going to win in general no matter what. So the primary is important. One of those races which, and listen, if you're not an attorney, I get it. You might look at it and go, Chief Justice, why do I care? You ought to care because look at the national news we've got right now on the in vitro fertilization situation. That's a national story that just came out of our state Supreme Court. When you've got things that are happening at the state legislative level on gambling or school choice or transgender treatments of kids or whatever else, you may well find them going to state court, which may mean they wind up in our state Supreme Court. Well, right now, one of the most contentious races in this state is between two Republicans. Justice Sarah Stewart, who currently sits on the court, is vying to be the Chief Justice. And then the guy sitting in studio with me right now is Brian Taylor, who I've known now since, we got elected together in 2010. All right, I'm going to introduce you first. I've got your mic turned off. I'm going to say things about you, and you can't say a word about it. All right, so here's the bottom line. Brian Taylor has been a senior advisor to two governors. That's Governor Riley and Governor Ivey. He was chief legal counsel to Governor Ivey. He has also, by the way, been a JAG officer who retired at the rank of major, served on both active duty and in the Guard, did a tour in Iraq. He is also, by the way, now running for Chief Justice. We met when we both served in the Alabama State Senate together. Brian Taylor, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Always great to be in here, Phil. Good to see you again.
Now, listen, brother, I have been 4 days before a primary race, and your voice sounds a lot perkier than I would have been right now.
Well, Phil just gave me this mint that froze my mouth, but it's thank you for that. I'm trying to do 2 to 3 events per day. We're going to run through the tape. We've had an enormous surge of support in the last 2 months after the holidays, people started paying attention to this race. And I think people are more attuned right now to what's happening in the courts than they ever have been before. People understand that the courts have become the new battlegrounds. As Democrats recognize that they can't flip legislatures in red states, they're going after the courts. And so these decisions are coming before judges.
Yeah, they are. And checks and balances, we have three branches of government. And I think the interesting dynamic here would be, brother, if you're elected next week, then you will likely be. Is there a Democrat in the race?
There is a Democrat, Judge Greg Griffin from Montgomery, got into the race on the Democrat side. He's unopposed. So whoever wins this primary will oppose Justice Griffin. Judge Griffin.
All right. That being said, if you are elected, I would anticipate then that you would also be the winner of the general election because of the fact that we are a generally red state overall. I'm not going to just go too far down that field, but I'll say this. If you are, I think you'll be the only person serving in our state government who has served in all three branches at that point.
Well, I don't know about that, but I'll check on that. But I'll tell you, you mentioned that. My opponent has made a big deal about experience. In fact, her ad says experience matters, and she's exactly right. She's got plenty of experience on the court. She's been a trial judge. But my experience is 22 years of legal experience crossing the military, public service, and private practice. And so, as chief counsel to the governor, I oversaw, I had oversight of legal operations and affairs at over 100 different executive branch agencies. That's attorneys, that's legal support staff, it's technology, it's resources. In the military in Iraq, I participated on the team that helped stand up the military courts at the beginning of our actions there. So I bring a level of experience to this position that she just doesn't have. She's never run a large legal organization, and as you know, Phil, being Chief Justice in Alabama is like being the CEO of the entire court system.
So to add to his point, I can remember more than once when we would do like budget hearings when you and I were in the legislature, it was the Chief Justice who would come over and speak to us. And because the Chief Justice is exactly what you said, he is the chief of justice in the state. And he basically is the boss of every local court. Think about it. If you know your district court judge or you know your circuit court clerk or you know anybody who works in your courthouse, their ultimate boss is the person that you're vying to be, the person sitting in the Chief Justice seat right now.
That's a very important position with a lot of opportunity to make sure that we're streamlining our processes, modernizing our courts, making sure that resources are being allocated based on needs in the court system and not based on politics. And so those are things that the Chief Justice needs to be prepared to do. And of course, I can walk over to the legislature with my experience there. And I know folks, I know how the process works. As sitting on the budget committee and on the judiciary committee, I've exercised legislative oversight of the courts already and have participated in that budgeting process. So that's experience that I'm very proud of, and I don't hesitate to talk about it when she raises the issue.
Well, and rightfully so. And I think one of the things that people didn't know was out there until I became a part of the legislature was there's times too when there is that sort of blending of the moments. Like you said, when you walk over to the legislature, that may be because you have to present the budgets or whatever else or the requests, the appropriations requests. But then there's also times when we as a legislative body had to request an opinion of the justices. And there were times when literally as we're working through the issues as a legislative body, we needed to know what the justices thought about where this was going to go. And I can't imagine what it would be like to know that the person sitting up there on the bench is going to give us an opinion knowing what it's like to sit in our seats as a legislator.
Well, I think it'll be unique, but I will have the ability to understand the process of how laws are made, not only on the floor, but behind the scenes, how those laws are made. And that'll be very valuable experience for a justice sitting on the bench.
And then I'm sure there's also been times when you've advised the governor on the signing of those laws, too. Like I said, it's all three branches, which is crazy cool. All right, listen, I want to talk about several things. I mean, I've got a rack of stuff here, bro. So I'm gonna ping you hard on some stuff. But one of them is you just issued a press release today. So everybody's aware we've done a lot on this show. I've got about 3 or 4 minutes for the next break. I did a lot on this show a couple of days ago about the in vitro fertilization ruling that came out. I think my audience is pretty well versed. We could talk about in the weeds of that in a moment when we come back from the break. But the first thing though is you also just issued a demand for recusal to your opponent who currently sits on the bench. What's that about?
Well, we announced this morning that we're calling on Justice Stewart, who sits on the court and participated in this case, to recuse herself from any further votes in the IVF case. She has received $300,000, a little over $300,000, from the law firm representing the plaintiffs in that case. And so we think that under the canons of judicial ethics, she should simply just not participate anymore. People forget this case isn't over.
It just started.
The court has remanded this back to the trial court, and it's likely, I think, to come back before the Supreme Court again. And I don't think Alabamians like the idea of their judges ruling in cases, especially high-profile cases, when they've gotten campaign contributions of this magnitude.
Yeah. So, just to reiterate what you just said, the IVF ruling that we got from the Alabama Supreme Court that has caused international news in the last few days, it did not end the case. It basically reopened the case, if you get down to it. It allows it to be remanded back to the lower court with directions on what they're supposed to consider when they go at it again. And so the odds are that as big a deal as that case is, that they might try it again, and then it goes all the way back up to the Supreme Court again, and she took $300,000 from the same firm.
Let me be clear, it's $300,000 from the plaintiff's law firm, but it arrived to her campaign through political action committees, through three separate political action committees.
Okay.
But it's fairly traceable. You just go to the Secretary of State's website. It's all there. You can go to my website. We posted something on it today. I think another couple of outlets have picked up on the news release. But look, here's the thing. We need judges who are committed to not just being fair and unbiased and impartial, but who are committed to the appearance of being fair and impartial. People need to be able to have trust in the outcomes in the courts, and that's why we have in the canons of judicial ethics that judges should recuse themselves whenever there is an appearance that they won't be able to exercise their responsibilities impartially because of campaign contributions. And that's exactly what this scenario is about.
Wow. There's so much money in politics. Listen, we're going to wind up taking a break right now. When we come back, though, I want to get your thoughts on this IVF ruling. And then I want to talk about some other things like a judge just took Trump off the Illinois ballot. Did y'all hear about this? So when you get a rogue judge, it can make a difference. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just saving the world one soundbite at a time. All right, we're back in studio right now with Brian Taylor, who is running for Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court. All right, so Brian, you and I talked just briefly before the break there about the IVF ruling, the in vitro fertilization ruling that came out last week from the state Supreme Court. It's garnered national attention, maybe even international attention. And it's raised a lot of eyebrows, I think partly because it's been misrepresented to a great degree by the liberal media. They want to circle back. They found their way to get back into the abortion fight, I think. And just speaking politically for a minute, I think that they know the southern border is a losing topic. The economy is a losing topic. The energy sector is a losing topic. But abortion, oh my gosh. So they're trying to figure out a way to create the abortion argument in the IVF ruling. But it's still got some nuances and it's still got some meaning to the court system. And you would be dealing with it in a sense if you are elected to Chief Justice. What are your thoughts on this ruling?
Well, first, I agree with you. And I think it's ironic that that the Democrats nationally and Biden, you know, he sent his top health official to Alabama as if we were having some kind of natural disaster that we need the federal government's help because of this case. It's ironic that they're seizing on this because, as we just discussed, it's Democrat trial lawyers that are funneling money through PACs to my opponent's race to push this effort. You know, here's the thing about the case. Everybody in that case, including the defendant IVF clinic, agreed that those human embryos were human beings, were lives, that life begins at fertilization. So that really wasn't even the issue in the case. The case was about punitive damages, whether somebody can sue an IVF clinic for punitive damages. And when the court brought down that decision, it raised attention, obviously raised the concern among IVF clinics. Hey, you know, we can't be open, we can't have this open-ended liability and continue to operate. We need some clarity. We need some certainty here. But, you know, the legislature is going to come in and is going to address that. And I think you're right. Nationally, folks have seized on this and tried to make some connection between this and the Dobbs case that overturned Roe v. Wade. There's no connection. This case is not about abortion at all. Overturning Roe v. Wade didn't have anything to do with this case. But they're going to seize on that, and they're going to try to make political hay out of it in the presidential campaign and
well,
in the congressional
and I don't want to go too far because I know it puts you in an awkward spot. I mean, you running for office can't be talking about matters of pending legislation and cases that are still before the bar or before the bench. But the fact is, even today, we are watching the legislative process as they attempt to reconcile with the recent ruling. You know, one of my concerns, and I've already shared this with the audience before. One of my concerns is that in an effort to rush out and mitigate the screams of the liberals who are going to scream no matter what we do, that somehow or another they can quickly do a knee-jerk legislation and it'll be better. But then they run the risk of knee-jerk legislation never being good legislation. Maybe even undoing some of what we fought for the last 45 years in the pro-life arena. And I know that you're very pro-life, and you are. I know that for a fact. You're very pro-life. That being said, listen, I'm going to move on from the topic because I can't get you to opine deeply on that unless you want to add something.
Well, I think I can say this, and I'm not saying anything that's not being discussed publicly. I mean, there's an opportunity here for the legislature to do this right and to protect life, the sanctity of life, and at the same time prohibit or stop lawsuit abuse against IVF clinics. Look, opening up businesses, hospitals, IVF clinics to unmitigated risk of punitive damages and uncertain liability, that's what drives businesses out of the state. That's what drives healthcare providers out of the state. we need to make sure that we have clear laws that let everybody know what their liability, what their exposure to risk is going to be, and judges need to enforce those laws as they're written. So it's very important for the legislature to get this right. I agree with you. And you know, we may end up, you and I have both been there, you may end up with some piece of legislation that overshoots, but the legislature will have the opportunity to come back and correct that. So there's a process. It's a democratic process, and it's absolutely important that judges apply the law as written and don't legislate from the bench.
Okay, perfect segue to where I was going to go next, because a moment ago, before you even walked in the studio, I did a whole section in the middle of the illegal, you know, immigrant invasion that we've had as a nation right now. In the middle of, and there's Trump up on the screens right now, both CNN and Fox covering his press conference at Eagle Pass, Texas right now. But in the middle of all of the first part of my show, I had one story, and that was about the city of New York had passed a law, the city of New York, their city council, which, you know, is like New York's population is almost two times the size of Alabama, but New York City. But the city of New York had passed a law to allow illegals to vote in their elections. At the very least, non-citizens, some would say it would be construed as illegals, but at the very least, green card holders and other non-citizens would be allowed to vote. It was their state Supreme Court that just ruled yesterday that that was a violation of their state constitution. So, I mean, what we're looking at even right there is a ruling in which a state Supreme Court had to step in and unwind things that were being done in other parts of the state.
Yeah, look, I hope people are starting to pay attention to the importance of these state court races. We're lucky in Alabama that we elect our judges, because that means we get to elect judges who share our philosophy and our values. But as you're looking at state Supreme Courts around the country, look what Colorado did, taking Trump off the ballot. This judge in Illinois taking Trump off the ballot.
Oh, yeah, we're going to talk about that in a minute.
You know, when judges do their job and apply the law as written, even if the outcome is not the preferred outcome from a policy perspective, the people, it recognizes that we're a government of laws and not a government of men. It allows the people to enact their policy preferences as intended by the founders through the legislators that they elected to do that. And so that's absolutely critical. And, you know, we have too many liberal judges who are trying to weaponize the court system.
All right, listen, we're with Brian Taylor right now, who is running for Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court. He's with us here in studio. We're going to come back from this break, and we'll start pinging a little bit more in that same vein we just had a moment ago, like the fact that Trump was just kicked off the ballot by a judge, a liberal judge. It matters. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation, this one, Alabama. Y'all don't talk about this show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi all thrown in just for good measure. All right, I'm back here in studio right now with Brian Taylor, former state senator Brian Taylor, former advisor to two governors Brian Taylor, former major JAG officer Brian Taylor, who is running now to be chief justice because you just needed something else on your resume, I guess, bro. That's all there is to it.
Well, it's important. It's an important race, and I just couldn't believe we were going to let the most liberal justice on the Supreme Court, my opponent, walk into this seat uncontested. She announced a year ago and was uncontested for about 7 months, and so I was doing some voluntary legal work for the party at the time. I said, well, if nobody else is going to run, I'll run, because conservative Republicans need an alternative on the ballot that they can go into the polls and hold their head high and know that they're getting a conservative Republican and not somebody like Sarah Stewart, who's funded by Democrat trial lawyers and liberal special interests.
Well, you said that a few times.
I say that a lot everywhere I go, because look, people need to know she's running an incredible ad campaign. She's got billboards. She's got TV. She's got radio. $1.2 million just since December has come to her from Democrat and liberal trial lawyers. I'm not making this up. You can look at it on the Secretary of State's website. But I know the average person, your listeners, don't have time. They worry about working and they're going to their kids' ball games. And so people just need to be very careful about trusting what they see on the TV and pay attention to shows like this and really listen to us talk about the issues and talk about the campaign.
All right. So listen, I want to hit a few things with you. Endorsements matter. You've got some good ones. Fundraising matters. She's got a lot of fundraising, like you just pointed out. You've got your own. But then there's also, I think it's incumbent upon us to look and see where the person has been. So I mentioned a few things about your resume a while ago, but here's what a lot of people may or may not even know. On this show, we have been constantly dealing with the issue of public libraries.
Yep.
And we have dealing with the fact that there's so much tripe being put into front of our kids in libraries. We are absolutely on board with Moms for Liberty. They have been an organization that we've had on this show multiple times, and I recently sponsored a table at one of their dinners with Riley Gaines. A lot of folks may not even know. This feels like such a softball interview, but it's so true though. This really actually happened. You recently gave away pro bono time to assist in one of these fights, did you not?
A lot of people were upset about the books, what books were being put in front of our children in the public libraries, as you just said. And Republican Party Chairman John Wall did a great job getting a resolution passed at the State Library Board. The Alabama Public Library Service got a resolution passed that said they would start allowing people to submit the titles and authors of books that they wanted to challenge as inappropriate for children. But interestingly, the Public Library Service said, "Well, we'll receive the list, but we're not going to make it public." They told the press, "We're not going public with this." Well, yeah. What good is keeping the list if parents don't know what books to look out for in the library? So, a group of concerned parents and grandparents called me, and I said, "Sure, I'll help." It wasn't hard. We filed a threatened a lawsuit, I guess, but we also filed a public records request, and thankfully. We were successful getting the Alabama Public Library Service to backtrack on that position and send us the list of books. And so that's on my website now, too. Unfortunately, every time you want to see how the list is updated, you have to file a new public records request. It'll take probably an act of the legislature to get them to put something like that on their website, which they should just do without the legislature. But we were happy to get that done for folks so they can go see what books are in our public libraries that are inappropriate for kids.
Major issues that are currently out there as a part of the news cycle, school choice. You were there in 2013 when we passed the Alabama Accountability Act.
Yeah, and then after I left the Senate, went back into private practice, I was hired by a group called the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty.
Absolutely.
To represent the interest of private schools, private Christian schools, and making sure they weren't discriminated against when that law was put into effect. You may recall AEA, who opposed the law and wanted it declared unconstitutional, fought us on that. But we were successful in having the Alabama Accountability Act upheld. And so that's part of my record as a lawyer in private practice is defending religious liberty and school choice.
So another one of the things that you and I so Brian and I, like I said, served together in the Alabama State Senate. We actually sat next to each other on the Senate floor. Actually, it was you and then Bill Holtzclaw and then me. So Holtzclaw was our intermediary. I'd say hit him, tell him.
We had a great suite of people who I probably don't realize that we all shared a secretary, and it's a little bit like living in a college dorm room. It's not exactly the nicest offices in the state.
So you and I, though, I really feel like you and I were the two leads on the effort to cut legislative pay. A lot of folks, by the way, try to find me another one somewhere out there where a legislative body or any government official has voluntarily cut their own pay and also cut it for years to come. And you and I, it was your bill, and I actually debated it at the well of the Senate, and we got it passed to cut our own pay.
Well, your support was crucial, and I think a lot of us coming in as freshmen that year understood that the legislature really needed to be cut back a little bit and remember who the boss is. They had voted themselves that under Democrat control, they voted themselves a massive 60% pay raise. And you and I and others campaigned on repealing that. I was very happy to see that done. And that goes to the importance of fiscal responsibility. You were the chairman of the Committee on Fiscal Responsibility. I was your vice chairman, but yep. Pleased to work with you. We did a great job on that committee of making sure that there's a number of policies that we implemented that made state government more accountable. And more fiscally responsible. And so that's something I want to bring to the courts too, is a real goal of making our courts more streamlined, more fiscally responsible and accountable. And we need to do that because the courts are obviously an important part of the general fund budget, which is always fighting for money.
Always fighting for money. And it's a huge deal. And yet at the same time, who gets the job matters. A couple things have happened in just like in the last 24 hours. A little while ago, we were talking about why it's so important to have people that are not agenda-driven, that they are not, by the way, we want them to be conservatives, hopefully proven conservatives. Vast difference between being a Republican and being a conservative. That's why I wanted to, before I even got to this next question, I wanted to bring up the fact that you have been in the fight to repeal pay. You've been in the fight on the library situation. You've been in the fight. I know you were definitely in the fight against illegal casinos, and some of the things we're seeing right now in the legislative process are just awful, and you've been in the gambling fights neck deep. And that being said, we just saw another state, but we just saw yesterday a judge flagrantly decide to just take President Trump off the ballot in Illinois, and it goes again to the very heart of what it means to elect people to the bench.
Well, you're exactly right, and I want to be very clear, Phil, because I don't want to leave anybody with a misconstruing what I'm saying. It is important for judges to be fair, and that means that sometimes plaintiffs are going to win, sometimes defendants are going to win.
Sure.
But every party in the courtroom needs to know, hey, this judge is going to rule based on the law. This judge is not going to make things up from the bench. He's not going to assume powers that he or she doesn't have. And that's what I'm committed to. The law, upholding the Constitution, we got to have the rule of law in this country or everything falls apart. When you have judges like that who are just willy-nilly deciding that they know what's best for everybody else, our democracy breaks down. We're a government of laws, not a government of men. And so, like I said earlier, we've got to make sure that our judges respect the role of the legislature. And that goes back to what we were talking about, too, the experience I have in the legislature, understanding that role as a representative of the people to implement and enact their policy preferences. That's the job of the legislature. And I'm going to respect that and honor that as Chief Justice, so that we're going to apply the law as written by the legislators to the cases before us.
Well, somebody asked a question on the show yesterday, and I gave my review on it. So I won't poison the well. I'll let you see if you have thoughts on this. But they asked, why do we elect our judges? Wouldn't it be better to not have politics in the selection of who's governing or who is working from the bench? And I had a response to that. But give me your thoughts on the idea of electing judges.
Well, I think, you know, it's certainly a double-edged sword. You risk the possibility of electing judges who do have a very political, personal agenda. The only agenda I have, and this is what it's so important for people to pay attention to, the only agenda I have is fairness, predictability, and consistent outcomes across the courts. And so when I talk on the campaign trail, when I'm here talking with you, I'm not talking about a personal agenda or a political agenda. I'm talking about a judicial philosophy. And we are lucky to be able to elect judges that share a philosophy of a conservative philosophy of interpreting the law as written, interpreting the law as originally understood by the people who wrote it, and not making up new definitions for words like woman, but instead giving meaning to the law as it was intended by the people who passed it. So I talk about that all day long. I'm not afraid to talk about that. And we're fortunate in Alabama to be able to elect judges based on that. And we have to be careful. That's what we're electing judges on, too.
Well, absolutely. And I think the other point that I made yesterday, too, was if we didn't elect them, they'd have to get to the bench somehow, which would mean very likely by appointment. And then you just run the risk that whoever is the local mayor for the municipal courts or for the governor who's been elected to appoint the circuit and whoever, whatever bench is being appointed, they still have to be appointed by someone who was probably elected, and then you never know what you're going to get. If you had Randall Woodfin, mayor of Birmingham, appointing, you don't have to comment on this, but Randall Woodfin, liberal mayor of Birmingham, appointing people to the courts, what would that do to our court system? I would much rather know that in races like our Supreme Court Chief Justice that we have a statewide review at the ballot, and that 6 years later, 4 years later, we can choose not to reelect them.
Yeah, if you get a judge who's not applying the law, then you can show that judge the door and bring in a new one. And I'm reminded of what you said. I tell people I'm a Scalia-style originalist. And one of my favorite opinions written by Justice Scalia was his dissent in the Obergefell decision. That's the gay marriage case. He said he didn't really have a personal preference one way or the other on that issue, but he was writing in dissent to express his concern about who makes the law. And he said, do we want the law made by 9 appointed judges who don't stand for election before the people in Washington, D.C., or do we want the law to be made by the people. And that's why it's important in Alabama that we have elected judges who respect, again, the legislative prerogative there.
All right, brother, we're going to take one more break. We'll come back from this break, wrap it up with Brian Taylor. It's been good to see you, man. And I know you got you probably got a whole weekend of campaigning ahead of you, but Tuesday's coming.
We got pancake breakfast on Saturday.
You got all the goodness.
Love that stuff.
All the goodness. All right. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, in studio, Brian Taylor. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just making common sense like a superpower. All right, listen, we are finishing up our time with Brian Taylor. I know you probably got stuff to do tonight. You probably got stuff to do tomorrow.
I've got lots of events. I got lots of calls to make. We're still trying to raise money to compete against the trial lawyer money coming into my campaign, my opponent's campaign. So, I want to say if there's anybody out there that's willing to share their resources with our campaign and help push us over the top, they can go to my website at briantaylor.com. That's Brian with a Y. Taylor.com, and there's a link there to donate. But I appreciate whether it's a financial contribution or just whether it's getting on Facebook and sharing our message with friends and family and folks you go to church with. We've got to get the word out in this sort of a guerrilla campaign here since we haven't the challenge against the trial lawyer money in this Republican
race. And speaking of which, I just saw an article this morning You've gotten some major endorsements, but two of them that are actually out there working on your behalf right now, apparently the Realtors Association are very concerned about what it could mean to have a less than conservative judge chiefing the Supreme Court. And then you've also got an organization that is very, very much in the pro-life fight that is out there duking it out for you. Apparently, I know you don't coordinate with those directly, but I just saw them listed. There's a story here on The Guardian. Came out this morning that says that there is an organization that is literally dedicated to the idea of fair courts and pro-life movement that is out there campaigning for you right now.
Well, we were doing everything we can to try to compete with the trial lawyer money that my opponent's getting on the air. And I was obviously happy. I'm not familiar with the folks at that group, but we were happy to see that I was getting that support. We've gotten support from other groups too nationally. Veterans for Trump has endorsed my campaign. The National Legal Forum has endorsed my campaign. Yeah. So it's great to see groups, conservative organizations around the country standing up to what is it? Make no mistake, there's a concerted campaign out of the Democrat headquarters to get involved in these state Supreme Court races to pick off these judicial seats one by one in Republican primaries.
And what's so interesting is we think of ourselves, Alabama, as a deep red state. And yeah, I mean, red doesn't necessarily mean conservative, but still, at the very least, Republican, it's a very deep red state. And yet, they still see targets of opportunity within our own state. We're not California, we're not New York, we're not Illinois, but they still see targets of opportunity here, and they will do all they can, they being the left, they will do all they can to unravel what has been built over time that makes us what I would call a bastion of freedom. In the U.S. process.
Well, look, Sarah Stewart said yesterday an article came out about how much trial lawyer money she was receiving in her campaign, $1.2 million. And her response was, well, don't worry about that because the trial lawyers have been giving to Republicans for 15 years. Well, that's true because they've realized that it's a red state now and they can't win Democrat elections. So they're now shifting their strategy to support Republicans. But one of the things I talk about on the trail is we need more judges and more Republican elected officials across the board who have the fortitude. That's with a capital F, the fortitude to stand on the conservative principles that we promise people we believe in and stand for.
All right. Well, all right. You gave us the website. We know where to find you. Appreciate you making time today. I know you had to drive up from Birmingham. It's so much better to be in studio. You could have called in, I know. Of course, you and I go way back, so it's always good to see you no matter what. And, you know, I am in the position where I am really not I make it a point not to do endorsements, but I think the audience has quickly gleaned who I'm for in this race. And brother, I'm for you.
Thank you.
And I don't mean that a little bit. I mean like I'm proud to know you. I'm proud to call you friend. You and I have been in the trenches together. We have fought legal battles together. And I'm of the mind that you're the right guy for the job. So
that means a lot, especially this close to the race. And you're one of the guys who served in the Senate. You still enjoy a reputation as one of the most conservative members ever to have served in the Alabama legislature. So thank you for that support.
I appreciate it, brother. And listen, I own this microphone, so I can do what I want with it. So I'm going to pray right now. You ready? Here we go.
Ready.
God Almighty, Lord, I bless your name. And I thank you for the fact that we have a chance to cast votes. I thank you that we live in a country where we can vote for even the smallest of offices and the greatest of offices. And I pray right now that you bless Brian as he goes forward. God, give him strength for these final days. Give him favor. Lord, give him good winds at his back. And Father, I pray in Jesus' name you remove every obstacle and bless him as he does what he does best. And all in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Phil.
Yeah, bro.
I'll also bring up, he's got some support in the text over here. Teresa from Town Creek says, thank you for having Brian Taylor on today. I was undecided on who to vote for until today.
Ah, thank you, Teresa. I appreciate it. Please tell everybody you know.
Right Side Ruffians coming in hard. All right, listen. Coming up next, we're going to be switching gears. I've got Eric Johnston, who is himself a legal scholar, somebody that Brian and I both worked with quite handily down in Montgomery on conservative policy issues like pro-life bills and anti-gambling bills and things like that. Eric Johnston should be calling in right at the top of the hour to give us an update on some things that have been happening even today in our state legislature. What are they doing right now? We just saw that something passed, something, and I can't even give you the details on it because I haven't read it yet, but something just passed in the state house on this in vitro fertilization thing worries me when I see legislation come together and fly that fast. It could mean very, very good things, or it could mean somebody didn't think this thing through. We'll talk to Eric Johnston about what he knows. We'll talk to Eric Johnston about why the Senate Tourism Committee met today for the gambling bill and then canceled their meeting at the last minute. I mean, you got to look at this and go, what in God's name is happening? School choice, where are we right now? Is it moving? Eric Johnston hopefully has some answers for us. You guys stay tuned. Coming up next, knee jerks and dice rollers. That's where we are. We'll be right back.